Given the circumstances, as you said, five outs away from 3 out of 4, getting a game on the Braves who lost earlier, how much does it sting as the 8th and 9th unfold?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. All these games count. You got it. But like I said, we still got a month left. A lot of crazy stuff happens in September, and we're still in August. So obviously it hurts because we're going up against a team that we got to beat to be there. But it is what it is. We just got to turn the page and, you know, get ready for this next series.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, August the 26th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fan-Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to an off-day edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Come to you around lunchtime here on the Mets off day after an awful loss on Sunday afternoon out in San Diego. And we're going to have a lot to talk about that and about the rest of the season, about 31 games or so left to the season. And a lot of highlights last week, a lot of big moments, maybe none bigger than Francisco Lindor. It's an amazing story. In the back half of the show, we'll get into Lindor because the debate about Lindor is heating up. He's finally entering himself into a larger national debate, and it might be time to see, have we finally really turned the corner on Francisco Lindor? Is he part of the inner circle here of Mets fandom? The L word, leadership word, has come up around Mets circles, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But welcome to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast, coming to you a little later than normal. Wanted to pop in here on the off day. Quite honestly, it was it was the worst loss of the year yesterday afternoon. A real gut punch. And as Mets fans on this show, we've seen a lot of those over the years that we've been together. Obviously, Mets fans have seen many of those, especially if you've been watching this team from the beginning in 1962. But yesterday was one of those games where you certainly want to have that back. It really, though, and to me, I think the sobering fact of yesterday's game, and one of the reasons why sometimes I don't come to you right away after a game is because you want to marinate on things, you want to hear the post game, you want to be able to understand things and have a more balanced, educated opinion on things. And obviously, not much has changed as far as I'm concerned anyway, almost 24 hours later, but the sobering part about yesterday, and I think throughout the year, there's been this feeling of Mets magic. And the Mets, who had that awful May, you guys all know about it, played as the best team in the league over a two-month span, settled in a little bit, and really has settled in to, they win 4 out of 7 games usually. That's kind of where we've seen them at. And they winning 4 out of 7 against Baltimore, one of the better teams in the league, competing with the Yankees for the AL East, and then splitting in San Diego at the beginning of a tough last West Coast trip of the season with how hot San Diego has played, playing 700 baseball. There's nothing to sneer about that at any point of the season. Now, it doesn't take away from how bad yesterday's loss is, because some execution of pitches and the W word, the walks, which we talked about coming up again, had everything to do with it. I mean, constantly, whether it's the Diaz and the Jackson Merrill home run that walked off the game, or Buto the inning before, Mets pitchers getting behind, not throwing strikes, and we'll talk about this, and it's a big difference, and it's probably going to be the reason why, if they don't make the playoffs, that we're going to point to the reason why, I mean, there's always more than one scapegoat, but the reason why it'll be what we chat about today in this opening. But all season, despite the struggles, the slow start, the bad bullpen, and the injuries, things like Senga, things not working out, you know, Pete not having the year that you expect, Beatty not having the year that you expect, all the craziness, what's gone on with Diaz, bullpen injuries galore, you've always felt that the Mets of this team, because everybody keeps telling me this, and I agree that there's a certain amount of mojo, so to speak, or this team is a fun team. Some people I've seen on X mention that they think this summer has been more fun than 2022, which is crazy because 2022 was as close to what we've seen in the last 25 years as a magical summer as there's been. I mean, I put it right up there with 2006. I know 06 ended poorly in a different way than 22, but I think what happened is getting so far ahead, the burden of expectations, the frustration of the Braves playing at such a high level for so long, where the Mets, you know, are basically at the equivalent of them driving 95 miles an hour and the Braves just driving 110 past them and you just can't keep up. But the sobering thing about yesterday is I think the Mets are going to have a hard time winning more than 84, 85 games. And if you look, 4 out of 7, which is very reasonable when you play teams like the Braves and Milwaukee down the stretch and the Phillies and finishing up this West Coast trip with Arizona and then Chicago and then, you know, coming home and playing who they have to play. They still, I believe, had the Nats and some other teams there. Toronto, that's not, you win 4 out of 7 the entire season, you win 92 ball games. And that's plenty to get yourself usually into a wild card spot. Now, teams that do that don't usually play 350 baseball and play like the 62 Mets, or maybe soon we'll call it the 2024 White Sox and put themselves in a hole. But I think really at this point, knowing that the Mets are an 85 win team, 84, 85 wins, I think they're on pace for 84 as of this morning. It really now has come down to, it's going to be hard to see them catch up, even if they swept the D-backs, to catch up to Arizona, who's playing at a high level. San Diego, the level that we thought maybe the Mets were about to take off on when they were 7 games or so over 500, maybe the 10, 15, 20 games over 500, maybe they had an outside shot at 90, a level that they could not keep up at, where they had so many stub your toe games. We talked about that. Miami and Anaheim and Oakland. Just go on and on. That they just had too many of those, where San Diego and Arizona did not, and that's the position they're in. And then maybe due to some luck, the Braves have had a ton of injuries and underperformance, and now it's really come down to a 3-game spread in the loss column, where the Mets and the Braves are going to go down the stretch. They have 3 games against each other in September in Atlanta. One of them is a makeup game. But the sobering thought right now is that the Mets are an 85-win team. I'm not sure I don't think they'll win less. I'm not sure they have the capabilities of getting hot enough, a combination of their own internal issues as well as the schedule, to do much better than that. Now, never say never, but they continue to show you, mainly because of this bullpen and the walks out of this bullpen, that that's who they are. And the question then remains, is it going to be Mets mojo that's going to maybe push them a little bit above that? And even if it doesn't, if 85 wins is who they are, with the way that the Braves pitching, which is underrated good, is this really a situation where it's the Mets pitching, it's the Mets mojo versus the Braves pitching? It really seems to have come down to that. And at this point, being honest with all of us here, what makes you think, if we were sitting here, and it was the shoe on the other foot where the Braves were the Mets, and the Mets were the Braves, the Mets had the pitching, and maybe they had the same injuries that they had to key offensive players. And nobody's feeling sorry for the Braves, because nobody in the past has felt sorry when the Mets have had guys out. Nobody cared that Diaz was out last year. Nobody cared. And if it was the logical way that you look at the sport, what makes you believe that a staff that, and look at what the Braves have right now. The Braves maybe have injuries. Maybe they don't have the it factor like they've had in prior seasons. But they have a legit ace in Chris Sale. And maybe Max Fried, who's going to be a free agent, maybe he's got some miles on him and he's had some things that, you know, have popped up on the check engine light, but he's still Max Fried and he's still pitching. And you have to wonder with down the stretch where he has a lot to prove being a free agent, that's a dangerous situation. So you almost have two co-aces, even without Spencer Strider. And then there's the veteran Charlie Morton, who could always give you an elite outing. And then Ronaldo Lopez, who made his way into the rotation after being a reliever, has been has performed as a top of the rotation type. Now, he's maybe innings-wise, he's going where he hasn't gone quite some time, but he's still there and he's still performing at a high level. Every day, good team, bad team, you saw it when they played the Phillies last week, the Braves are in ball games because their starting pitching keeps them in that game. And you know, I don't care if they have no Austin Riley, no Ozzie Albies, no Acuna. I don't care about that. They still have enough offense when you're playing 3-2, 4-3 games and a pedigree of winning that makes it possible that every night they're a danger. So when you look at that and then you add in their bullpen, which is the antithesis of the Mets bullpen, their closer has been really good and elite this year, unlike Diaz. Their bridge to Iglesias has not been filled with potholes of extreme levels of walks. And by the way, the other thing, and it was brought up over the weekend, Mets pitching, especially out of the bullpen, they give up a ton of home runs. Part of that is, hey, you get behind 2-0 like you did, like Diaz did, that hitter knows what's coming. Same thing happened with Buto. Wasn't throwing strikes. Profar knew, and they, you know, basically got beat with a couple of home runs. That was the only way San Diego was going to beat the Mets yesterday. They couldn't seem to string together enough hits. It was with walks and home runs. And that's a Mets bullpen specialty. And that's not a Braves bullpen specialty. And right now, the heart says the Mets, because it's been such a fun summer, because you've seen these great walk-offs that happened this week with Winker, with Alvarez. What a fun couple of games there. What a fun series against Baltimore, even the game they lost. You've seen the great characters like Iglesias, like Pete Alonso, even though he's had a down year, Lindor in the season, and we'll talk about that in the second half, he's having the emergence of Vientos. And I know that Alvarez has been struggling with his bat, but the emergence of Alvarez as a leader behind the plate. The grimace, the OMG, the energy, even though maybe attendance hasn't caught up with the belief that maybe this team has. It's been such a fun season. And even though it was very toxic early, even with them leveling them out and playing who they are, it's still been, I think, a more positive fan experience, you know, basically since June 1st. And I think they're starting to see what the Mets are trying to do here. And that's all fun and dandy. Mojo and heart and the it factor. Look, the Braves had a ton of that. We didn't see the Braves basically lose at anything less than a high-level 650-plus clip from Memorial Day 2022 through the end of last year when they lost in the playoffs. The Braves played at a high level. Everything seemed to go their way. But when you look at that, and despite all that, the cold, hard facts is the Braves have the pitching. The Braves have the starting pitching. The Braves have the bullpen. And maybe they don't have the offense right now, but if they were somewhat healthy, I have a feeling that the wild card, which was a big fear of mine, even when teams were struggling, I didn't think San Diego and Arizona had it in them to play at this level, but obviously when they were healthy, I thought Atlanta would be playing at a 90 to 92 win plus level. I said if any of these teams or all of these teams start playing at that level, I'm not sure that the Mets have it in them to play at that same level for two reasons. They dug themselves a hole, and number two, I didn't think the bullpen was good enough. I didn't think the starting rotation is good enough. And even with big performances by a David Peterson, by a, you know, Jose Quintana, I saw everybody want to shoot him into the space this week. He's still a veteran pitcher that can do what you saw. Yeah, he's going to struggle, but he can do what you saw. But the problem is, maybe he'll do that. He and Blackburn, and maybe Manaea is turning the corner, but I'll put him in there. And Quintana, and guys like that, they're as likely to get five innings, four runs as they are six shutout innings or six and change shutout innings, because they're not Sale, they're not Freed, and maybe they're more Charlie Morton, but they also don't have the resume all these guys, or recent success of a Charlie Morton. I shouldn't say resume. And then you have a bigger question. And I think this is a larger question that will be discussed even as we get into the off season, regardless of what happens, except for one thing. You'll see where I'm going. But I think you have to start asking yourself, he's a very good closer. He's going to be here a long time. I love him to death. I love his stuff. And maybe he's just recovering from the Achilles. But we've seen in, forget 19 and 20. Want to say 19 was this crazy, horrible outlier when he came over from Seattle. 20 was the pandemic season. There's 21, 22, and 24. The three, did not play last year. The three seasons that he's been healthy and right. The three seasons that haven't had these extremisms of performance or health or the truncated season. What you saw yesterday was more of the Diaz we've seen. The Diaz that we saw from Memorial Day or mid to late May of 2022 to the end of the season, that's been the outlier. And the question is, we know Diaz is a very good closer. You could certainly win a lot of ball games with Diaz as the closer, just like you could win a lot of ball games with Armando Benitez as the closer. And I think Diaz is better than Benitez, but he's got a lot of Benitez in him. And I'll tell you what, I am starting to question if you could win a championship when Diaz is your closer. Because yesterday, an elite closer would have shut down that ninth inning, wouldn't have been fluttering around with Merrill, and wouldn't be in the postgame telling everybody, I just didn't hit my spot. Yeah, Diaz is accountable. No doubt about it. Diaz is accountable. But he's not executing. And I see a lot of, well, it's his first year back from surgery. That's true. We'll see where that goes. But I saw some of the same stuff. Go look at the game logs down the stretch in 2021 when the Mets, I know they finished under 500, but were in first place. And we're still up until Labor Day around this same time 3 years ago having a shot at things. Diaz had some killer blown saves. Killer. You know, even in 2020, you want to say that there was some big games. He was shaky in some big games. That was, you know, I'm not going to count those. That was basically a tournament. But you get where I'm going. Like, you can watch how Diaz pitched in that truncated season, and there's some similarities. So you have a situation where, down the stretch, you're having a team that's playing at about a 90 to 92 win pace over a period, but had such a big hole, has this bullpen that is the ultimate tease. I mean, Buto's been great. He's been one of those great stories, but his walk rate, whether it be in the rotation, and even as we've watched him come out of the bullpen with some great performances, he's been able to get away with some stuff, some long fly balls, some counts that were in the hitter's favor. I'm not saying he's been big, and they're going to need to rely on him down the stretch. The circle of trust with Leeds now is Nunez, Buto, Diaz, Maton. That's it. Brazenban, no. Stanek, no. Aravino, no. I mean, maybe it seems like they're throwing Danny Young into the equation, but the real thing is, and it's funny because all year, it's really just come down to the same thing. It's the same conversation. We've had this Mets mojo thing going on, and then it's Diaz in the bullpen. And quite honestly, at this point, you know, you want to say, Mike, you have to put all your chips to the center one way or the other. And it's hard for me to sit here on August 26th, as much as the heart and all these things that you can't find out on fan graphs or baseball reference or Baseball Savant, or all these other data-driven websites, it's hard for me to say that the Mets are going to be able to go north of 85 wins, that 85 wins will make it happen, and when push comes to shove, why wouldn't you bet on the Braves pitching, the Braves bullpen, when now you've seen how good it's been, even in the face of adversity and the injuries on the offensive side, and ultimately, and that's just my baseball principles growing up watching the game. Pitching, good starting pitching, elite bullpen, pitchers that don't walk hitters and throw strikes. Those kind of staffs, especially when you have an abundance of them, they usually go far and they do pretty well. And look, if the Braves make the postseason, and I'm sure by then they'll probably get Riley back, they'll have Albies back. I don't think they're going to be out the rest of the year going into October. They're going to be a tough out. I mean, Sale looked, I mean, you guys saw him when he pitched against the Mets at Citi Field. You get that three-game set. The Mets are a game back with two games back or tied or maybe even a game up. Let's say they get to that series. And I don't know who's lined up to pitch. It doesn't really matter today. It's weeks away. But if you got Fried and Sale and even Lopez, a three, you know, those three against the Mets three, even with the way Manaea is pitching, you got to give the Braves the advantage. And then late, right now late, even with the Braves' offense being compromised, they still have Olsen. You know, they still have some professional hitters in there. I don't know. I know Harris was hurt. I don't know what Harris's deal is. Duvall, Darnell, Sean Murphy. You know, I know they, you know, it's not the lineup that you expect, but they have enough professional hitters. We're late with the way the Mets are executing out of the bullpen with getting behind and walking guys. The walks kill. I don't care. And I'll tell you what, I don't care if you're playing the White Sox. Team, you know, on pace to beat the 62 Mets. You walk big league hitters and you put them in big time counts, you're going to lose. So it don't matter whether you have Grimace or OMG and that you get along and that you have this energy and you've been flying on this magic carpet ride. And all JD, you heard JD Martinez in the open. Just turn the page and go to the next day. This team has been good with that. After they got clobbered in Seattle, they came home and they did what they had to do. They stubbed their toe against Oakland. They did what they had to do. They stubbed their toe against Miami and Baltimore's coming in. They did what they had to do. They don't really let things linger. I mean, they've been through a lot. This has been a very trying season. But I'm just sitting here looking at that and just saying to myself, the closer still is a conundrum. I don't understand why he can't go two innings at this point in the year. I'm sorry. You know, I heard Mendoza after the game. He's barely pitched since the suspension. He's barely pitched in the last few weeks because of the way games have worked themselves out. It would have been a tremendous. And I'd be still having this conversation because I've been thinking about this a lot, about the Braves and the Mets. Even if they had escaped that game and won, whether they won it after the lead was coughed up by Buto or somehow they did something in extra innings, I still would be having this conversation. And maybe I'd be leaning more towards the magic because that's what we like to do in media and sports talk. Magic is always, and hope and amazing and believe is always what we want to lean on. It makes for really good radio. But cold, hard facts, especially in this modern age of all this information at the fingertips of everybody, is ultimately what will determine success or failure. Yeah, there's always that outlier. There's game 686. You know, there's teams that come out of nowhere, the 87 Minnesota Twins, and statistically probably shouldn't have won. Maybe the Dodgers against the Mets in 88. We could go on and on and on about those kind of things, upsets in all different sports. They happen. Giants, Patriots, they happen. But even in those situations, there was cold hard facts or things that are principles about winning that came into play. It wasn't just amazing and believe and magic beans and pixie dust. And right now, I don't know if magic beans and pixie dust, amazing and believe, is going to be enough to overcome Atlanta. I don't think 85 wins is going to get it done. I still think the Braves, even if they struggle, have a little bit of a jump on the Mets when it comes to wins. I think 88 wins is going to be necessary to nail down that final wild card. And God help the Mets this week if Atlanta plays well. I know they got a tough schedule. If they play well and the Mets flounder in Arizona against a very hot Arizona team, and then everybody's counting three wins in Chicago later in the week against the White Sox, that is a series and a team, especially if after you play a big series in Arizona, the day off is today, you fly out to Chicago, and that has late season, stub your toe, hangover effect, loss written all over it. Ask a guy, me by the way, who sat in the stands late in 1998, and down the stretch saw a Mets team, very similar to this team, get hot late and push for the wild card, lose heartbreaking games to Miami and Montreal. Two teams going absolute nowhere. And both those teams playing hard. Now, it was within their division, and they knew each other, and they had experience against each other. And there was always the Bobby Valentine factor back then. But two teams that play hard. You know, you're Grady Sizemore and you want to make an impression on your bosses in a lost season. You get that trash team that's going to lose 120 games to play hard and make contenders sweat and play solid baseball even in the face of losing, which is what I would be doing. Well, That's a win, whether you win on the scoreboard or not. And that's what the Mets are facing. And I don't know if their mojo is going to be enough. I think the walks out of their bullpen makes it harder than normal. The counts they get into, especially out of that bullpen, makes it harder than normal. And yeah, the starting pitching has done better. And maybe we're seeing Sean Manaea push himself into a conversation of finally wrangling up that talent. Maybe the Mets have developed, signed and developed a solution long term. It's going to cost them. But right now, the reality is this. 85 wins and mojo versus the Braves pitching and really good bullpen. And I don't know if that's going to be enough. So anyway, we're going to take a break. Second half of the show coming up. Francisco Lindor in the conversation for MVP. And I think it's interesting because Jeff Passan wrote an article at ESPN about his leadership. And Lindor is being touted as this, you know, game-changing, organization-changing type of player in the same breath as some of the greats that the Mets have seen over the years. And it's just such an amazing conversation because he's been a polarizing topic. And to this day, he's still in a lot of faces of the media and the fan base, a lot of facets of both of those segments of the stakeholders in the team. I think people can't understand it and they don't feel it. And the feel and the reality is two different things. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.